Our next guest this afternoon, historian Ian Evans, is on the phone and ready to talk about old shoes in old buildings. Ian, hello.
Hello, Carol.
Here I was, sticky beaking around the BBC's website, and there were you talking about old shoes.
That was a bit of a surprise.
It was lovely. I thought, I've got to get that man on my radio show right here in Australia, seeing as how you are from here, that you needed to come on the radio here in Australia.
Yeah, good idea.
Ian, tell me about your background as a historian. What is your area of expertise or special interest?
Well, I started out life as a journo, actually.
Troublemakers. Yes.
And I've written a number of books on the conservation and history of old Australian houses. And I became aware of this rather strange practice of concealing objects in houses and buildings. And I thought, somebody said, oh, that'd make a great PhD thesis. And I thought, well, yes, it would, wouldn't it? So anyway.
And so did you?
I did.
Oh, well done.
At your very own University of Newcastle.
Oh, look, the links just bring you closer and closer to Newey, don't they? Ian, it's a fascinating topic, and I loved watching the interview with you on the BBC's website, but you've actually written a significant article for the National Trust here in Australia.
Yes.
About, which is called Touching Magic, A Strange Secret Brought to Light. Yes. And in some ways it's kind of creepy, but in other ways it's sort of beautiful and reminds you of people who were wishing and hoping for so much that we take for granted these days, like good health.
Exactly, exactly. I think it gives us a whole new way of looking at these people and understanding the hopes and fears with which they lived every day.
Do you think that a story like this, which in many ways is, you know, incredibly contemporary when we consider, you know, people thousands of years ago being buried with trinkets or objects to use in the afterlife, or the carving of fertility figures and so on, in a funny way, it's the same kind of thing, isn't it? It's using a tangible object as some way of protection.
Yes, it is. And I think this is also a very old practice. I've got a sneaking suspicion that the Romans might have taken something very, very similar with them when they invaded Britain, and that this is perhaps where the business of planting shoes in buildings originated. So if that is the case...
And the Romans!
It's still being researched. We're looking at something that is a couple of thousand years old at least, and which came to Australia, and we didn't even know it was here until a few years ago.
Okay. My guest this afternoon, historian Ian Evans, and this is a gorgeous story. It's absolutely fascinating story, which is, I guess, about ritual. And you would assume, Ian, that as more and more people buy old properties and have the resources to refurbish and renovate, that perhaps we're going to find more.
Oh, I'm quite sure there are plenty more out there. These are not normally discovered until, you know, some building work is taking place. Perhaps people are taking down the chimney in the old kitchen and they're doing up the back end of the house, and that is very often the time that the builders say, hey, look what we found.
A shoe.
Yes, what the devil is that doing there?
A shoe. Now, the thing is, Ian, that if you're pulling the floor up of an old building and you find things under the floor, I guess that kind of makes sense. But when you are finding things hidden in walls or chimneys, fireplaces or in the ceiling, then they've obviously been put there intentionally.
Yes, I think in the past people have had a strong inclination to try to find a rational and sensible and logical reason for these things to be in those places.
But that's on the assumption that people are all of those things.
Exactly, exactly.
This story makes me think of the stories about priest holes in Britain.
Yes.
Where they would hide.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, what we're talking about here is magic, and people very likely went to church on Sundays, and so they were, you know, God-fearing religious people, but that didn't stop them going home and practicing folk magic. They didn't see any conflict.
Are there any, in the work that you've done with your PhD, Ian, are there any sort of written records or letters of, you know, letters from a parent to the child on the other side of the world in, you know, that new colony of Sydney or some such thing, saying when you build your home, be sure to put a shoe in that building somewhere?
Not a solitary word has been found about it in either the United Kingdom or Australia.
Isn't that interesting?
It was top secret.
So there's shoes everywhere, but people only ever talked about it.
That's right. It was an oral tradition, and I think it was very widespread in Britain, and it also spread very widely throughout Australia.
Ian, when did you learn about this story of the shoes? What was the first shoe that you heard of, and then when did you go adventuring and exploring? I know that you know of shoes found right here in Newcastle as well.
Oh, yes, quite a number. I first heard about it in England in, I think it was 2002. I had lunch with a couple of colleagues there from English Heritage, and I was aware that shoes had been planted in buildings in England for a very long time, but I thought that had faded away, you know, after the witchcraft scares.
Okay, but still as a charm or a spell?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But they said, oh, no, that kept right on going right throughout the 18th and 19th centuries, and this gave me a eureka moment because I realised that if it was happening in England in the 19th century, there was a very good chance that it came to Australia. So I started looking, and it didn't take long to start finding these things.
Did you find them from other people's stories, or?
Well, I put a message on the New South Wales Heritage Advisors email network, and that circulates right throughout the state to local heritage advisors.
Yeah.
And these are the people who go out into people's houses and advise them on what they can and can't do and how to do it and so forth. And so they get around a fair bit. And I started to get reports from them of the first one I found was in Lower Fort Street in Dawes Point in Sydney. And others soon followed from Victoria and elsewhere in New South Wales.
Gosh, what a story.
Yes.
And what about the ones that you know of that were found here in Newcastle that it seems we were just as... Is superstitious the right word? I suppose it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's the perfect word.
Yeah, although we would consider it a superstition now, you know, it was somewhat perhaps more of a strong belief then if you were thinking that placing this shoe as a charm or a protector in part of your house was going to save your child from one of the childhood illnesses that had perhaps knocked off, you know, bumped off three of your previous children.
Yes, that's correct. We have to remember that this was a time when people didn't really have the understanding of science that we have today. And, they would have regarded, for example, astrology or any other the other fringe ideas that we considered, that today we would not even consider as having any real reason at all. But they were given equal credence to magic.
Okay. Why shoes?
Shoes. Well, they are, as I said, there's no written explanation. We just have to make assumptions based on a lot of research and a lot of objects that have been found. But shoes are one of the things we wear that retain the shape of the body after we take them off. And there are not too many things that do that. So that's one reason. And the other things that were concealed include cats
and
garments.
Now, this is one of the items that you found in Cessnock was a 7-year-old boy's overcoat that had been placed in the wall of a cottage that was built around 1922.
Yes, that's correct. And it was easily datable because there was the wall was built with plasterboard and it had the date on the stamped on the inside of it. So, you know, the person who found the overcoat thought it was a rag at first, and he shook it open and realised it was a perfectly good, although somewhat worn overcoat, and it's the coat of a young boy.
Okay. And a whole bunch of shoes and a couple of cats in a house in Wilson Street in Carrington.
Yes, that's right.
And you think on this one that it was shoes of an entire family?
Yes, sometimes you get this. You get the shoes of mum and dad and the kids. And there are a couple of examples of this. They're not terribly common, but they do happen. And it's quite interesting when they do. And so you get all these tiny little shoes gradually increasing in size because they had big families in those days.
Mm.
And right up to the shoes of mum and dad.
Okay. Albert Street, Wickham. Three boots, one shoe found in the separate corners of a cottage roof. Over at Stockton in Mitchell Street, a woman's shoe from around 1932 found in the chimney flue while the owner was checking for earthquake damage. Islington, three shoes found under the floor during the demolition of an old house. James Street in Hamilton, shoes found near the chimney in the original kitchen and in the dining room near a fireplace. Aren't we funny animals, Anne?
Well, look, don't think Novocastrians were weird. They were no more unusual than people in any other part of Australia.
No, we're no weirder than anyone else.
Was happening.
Have you put a shoe in your roof, Ian?
No, I haven't.
You haven't?
I'm not superstitious. I don't believe in any of that stuff. But, you know, I'm just here to tell you about it.
It is a wonderful, wonderful story. And thank you so much for sharing a little bit more of the story with us this afternoon. And that story was actually from the National Trust, which you wrote for them a few years ago. But it, are you still looking for shoes and things?
Well, I'm also looking for what I call ritual marks, and these are a slightly different story, but perhaps we can talk about that another time.
Ritual marks?
Yes, I'll send you an email with some info.
Okay, we'll make a date to talk again very, very soon.
All right, thanks very much, Carol.
Thank you, Ian.